So our next speaker is Malcolm Backus. Malcolm, if you want to come and have a seat. Malcolm is chair of the Telegraph Hill Society, our sister organisation in the Telegraph Hill Conservation Area. Malcolm has had long experience on the Amenity Society's panel, which, until its recent disbandment, met planning officers fortnightly to consider planning applications in all Lewisham's conservation areas, including those which lacked Amenity Societies. Unfortunately, no representative from Lewisham was able to come today, so Malcolm is kindly presenting the notes provided by Lewisham Planning Department. Over to you.
Okay. Yes, thank you very much. Hopefully we'll get them up on the screen. The first thing I'd say is, as Harriet said, there's no one here who was willing or, shall we say, good Lord. Last time that happened to me, it was with a dog's lead when I was trying to do a local history walk. there doesn't seem to be anybody here who was willing to come from Lewisham Council, a point which would have been, I would love to have made whilst the mayor was still here when he could explain why nobody was able to, but never mind, perhaps it's lucky he's left. But there's, so all I would say is please don't shoot me. The slides I am presenting here are those from Lewisham Council. They're unadulterated slides. Claire has told me that I should try to be as uncontroversial as I can, but if a few comments slip in, my apologies in advance, I can't always stop it. So with that, let's work out how we go to the first slide here, because it isn't a clickery thing, which is that arrow button. No, the plus button, that button. Okay. So what we start off with was what Lewisham Council believed to be their overriding slogan or mission statement. You can, again, I've been told not to comment, but okay. The statement is making Lewisham the best place to learn, live, work and learn in London. And to be fair, I think Lewisham is trying to do that with the limited resources it has. And whoops, here comes the first comment. After a whole load of very bad decisions, I think ranging from about the 60s to the 80s or 90s. But I think now, whilst we do have cutbacks and a lot of cutbacks, there is a positive move in the right direction. So that's one of my own comments. There have been a lot of cutbacks. There have been a lot of changes. I think there's been about a 40% reduction in the planning and enforcement department overall in headcount over the last 5 years. It's not on this slide. But for those of you who can see it, and I gather the slides will be made available later, that is effectively the structure of the department at present. So Emma Talbot, who's been with the council now for a fair number of years, actually, in a number of planning roles, is now head of planning. And then there are effectively six senior managers with staff below them. Alison Bradshaw is in charge of business improvement and stakeholder management. Isn't that a nice 21st century term? Basically, I think what it means is liaising with everybody rather than anything else. Julia Robbins takes on the big projects, so those are like the centre of Lewisham, those sorts of areas, probably not many around here, certainly none in the Telegraph Hill area. Helen Milner is in charge of planning enforcement, so that's the area we all know well love. And then there are two planning managers with the planning officers below them, one Max Smith for the north of the borough, so that will include yourselves and ourselves, and one for the south of the borough, which I imagine probably includes Sydenham, doesn't it? Yes, yeah. And then finally there is a conservation and urban design manager, David Syme, who heads up the conservation team. We've had a bit of dispute as to how many conservation managers officers there are in the borough, and that's because a lot of them now have split responsibilities with other things. So I think at one stage we had two or three full-time ones. Whether you want to count that as one and a half or two at present, rather depends on how you split up the timing. But David is in charge of that area and in charge of the tree officer as well, of which we still have one, thank goodness. So that's how the team works at present. There's a slide there on what they believe their policy is. I think it might be worth reading out of it in the main. It's delivering, for those of you who can't see it, it's sustainable development and a positive and proactive approach. Positively seek out opportunities to meet the development needs of the area, meet objectively assessed needs, blah-de-blah-de-blah, approving development proposals at accord with development plan without delay and working in the public interest, with the bottom line of saying that we want to say yes to good development. Of course, the point which I think, that's a point which is stressed again and again, they do have to work both within the local plan, the London plan, and within national planning policies and within the law. But of course, what actually constitutes good development as opposed to bad development is an issue we've already had a little bit of disagreement on already, isn't it, as to whether or not modern architecture is getting better or getting worse. So it's very much a subjective issue. So here are some facts and figures, and again, I don't know how much you can see that. We won't go through the whole of it. But we've had a talk about there's the number of things that the council planning department has to do. And I think the statistics are something which did shock us a little bit at the meeting that we went along to. Because given the sizing of the staff, it is a little staggering. I mean, if you can read that down there, you may not. But there were 3,234 valid planning applications in 2016, which the council has to consider, with an addition of over 1,000 others which were rejected or withdrawn for a number of reasons. And that is a big workload. 2,000 emails a day, they say. That seems to be a little bit odd. I don't know. But maybe it is. I mean, but it's a hell of, even if it's half that number, it's a heck of a lot of emails to try and deal with in the department. 114 pre-planning application meetings, floor planning performance agreements, and 201 tree work applications, which I don't know what you feel, but I actually thought that number was a lot higher than that. But whatever it is, for the number of staff they've got, it is a big commitment for the council planning department to continue working with. And they do aim, as it says there, to reply to inquiries within 10 working days, general inquiries within 5 working days. There you go. The planning process is set out there, and you certainly won't be able to read that slide unless you have exceptionally good eyesight or you brought binoculars with you. But if, basically speaking, I can't even read it up there, so I printed out a bigger version. You start obviously with the submission of the application. They check, the council checks whether the application is valid. If it's invalid, they try to seek the additional information which is needed to validate the application, but if they can't, it's obviously rejected. If it is a valid application, it then goes to a case officer. There's a public consultation with the notices that you'll see on the street, the white ones and the yellow ones, and notice handed out to the houses which are directly adjacent. An issue, I have to say, locally we've had a major problem with quite often, because it actually means the ones which are totally bordering it. So it doesn't include, shall we say, the ones which are directly opposite. Or maybe if it's a lot of the complaints that we have at present are about these back blocky, horrible, I would say, extensions to properties that people seem to keep doing with roof lights in them. And those roof lights quite often shine down more than one property. But the only people who get the planning application, the notice, are the people on either side. Of course, there is one up in the street, the yellow one. It seems to disappear quite often in our area. But there you go. So there is a public consultation. Luckily, as a conservation society, we get notices of it as well, as I know Broccoli does, though you've had problems with that at times, haven't you? So we try to publicise them. And then there will be a site visit by the officer. They try to do a site visit on all sites. Consideration of the issues concerned. And then there'll be a recommendation by the officer as to how it moves forward. Most decisions are made by delegated decision. That means the case officer makes the decision and that's it. If there is sufficient objections, what sufficient is, I think, is a little bit blurred within Lewisham. I've never quite worked it out, but certainly it used to be 6 local residents, or the Conservation Society, or a local councillor, but I think they sort of merge that a little bit now. We've certainly had some with fewer objections than that, which have gone to council committee, and some of which are larger, which haven't. But if there is sufficient objections, it is then taken to a committee for a decision based on the recommendation of the case officer, which may be to approve or reject. If there aren't sufficient objections, then the case officer makes the decision themselves. He will either refuse permission or he will allow permission. There is a, it says three or more objections on that version. Someone's typed it in, look at that. So now we know. You can see at the top there, it says if three or more objections raised. So someone's actually typed that in on the top of the slide. It's not on my version. So and if it goes to objection, then it goes to a council committee meeting where the applicant and the objectors in total, one person representing them, are allowed a 5-minute talk to explain their side of the case, and then the council committee decides. The process isn't, and I'm going to be a little bit sort of slightly political and slightly warning here, because the process isn't as good, I think, in many respects as it used to be. You made reference to the Immunity Societies panel. We used to have the Immunity Societies panel in that process, which helped to make recommend what the decision the case officer should make. Obviously, at the end of the day, it was his own decision, but that helped him put information into that process. And I felt, and I know the other heads of conservation areas here felt, it was a very useful process to keep the similar sorts of policies across the borough and to keep people on the straight and narrow on both sides. That's now sadly through cutbacks gone, and I don't know whether we're going to get it back again. So at present, it is actually a bit of a slightly one-sided process, not least of the fact that unless you're really on top of the issue, conservation officers tend to talk about with the developer about improving the scheme, but they don't tend to come back to the conservation societies or indeed objectors separately and make the same sort of discussions. So it's a little bit one-sided in that respect. If I've got time, I'd also like to make a warning for people, which we only got caught out about just recently. The appeals process, which obviously comes at the end of there, where the applicant, if an application is turned down, can make an appeal. It goes through an appeals process with an independent adjudicator who then decides one way or the other. The majority of the appeals now are by written submission. You can't make additional submissions or verbal submissions. The appeals inspector decides them purely on what's already been said. And we were caught out by one just a little bit back where the council officer rejected a proposal. We discussed it with the council officer in advance. He said he was going to reject it. And because we're a small society and have limited resources, we decided, well, if he's going to object to it, there's no point us writing in a long submission objecting to it. It then went to appeal, and the appeal inspector wouldn't allow us to put the case we would have put because we hadn't put that in advance. So now even where the case officer is saying it's going to reject, we're shoving in shorter objections saying we agree with the case officer just so we have locus standi when it comes to the appeals process. So that's a personal addition, but perhaps a useful help for any other society and people who are involved. Does the process work well? Well, I'll leave that for you to decide individually one way and another. It's, I think, more hit and miss than it used to be. And I think that's because, again, there's been a cutback in the number of staff involved. I wouldn't blame that on any of the individuals concerned. I think they're actually doing a very, very good job, and I've said that before, for the number of people involved. But the number of people involved is very much more limited than it used to be. I think probably something we can talk about later on is how we can help the council or recommend to the council things they could do to improve and make that process easier within the limited number of people that they've got involved in it, because I'm sure there are ways that both of us can work together to improve the process. So there was another slide here which is about conservation. These slides were put together on the basically on the request of Claire. And apparently the first version that came through didn't have any mention of conservation in it at all. So she sent them back and said, could you actually mention conservation somewhere? So we have a conservation slide. 28 conservation areas, for those earlier who were saying 27. I noticed the number varied between discussions so far. Don't ask me which one was missed out on some of them. 25 Article 4 directions across the conservation areas. So obviously three which haven't yet got to that stage. 330 grade 2 listed buildings, 28 grade 2 star listed buildings, 2 grade 1 listed buildings, and 3 registered parks. One scheduled ancient monument, I was trying to think out what that was. Is that the ice house in Lee Manor? I don't know, but there's... And then 21 areas of archaeological priority and one area of special local character. So there are a lot of effectively conserved areas within the borough. although bear in mind what we said earlier, is that there is a limited number of people to look at what is happening in those areas and perhaps even more importantly, enforce what should be happening when people take liberties with it. Far side of that is they're talking about the characteristics which contribute to the area's special interests. Of course, those are set out very much more in detail in the boroughs, so I won't go through them, but very much more in detail in the boroughs' development management plan. And with, there's a little bit of extra guidance going at present. The council's beginning to put some more in place, again, with limited resources. There's a new one coming out on extensions and roof extensions and what have you. But basically, the majority of the detail in terms of what is required in a conservation area is laid down in the development management plan. Those plans, of course, may be changing. I think there's a later slide on that. We'll come to that in a few minutes. So what the council says its role is to manage change within the conservation areas, a point one of the other gentlemen made just a few minutes ago, that the Article 4 directions restrict permitted developments but are not automatic right to refuse developments, and that heritage conservation, not heritage preservation, though don't ask me, please, to work out what the distinction between those two were. I looked up before this, in case anybody asked me, I looked up conservation definition in the OED, and the conservation definition in the OED is preservation, protection, or restoration. So how the two possibly come apart, I don't know. Maybe someone later on the day can explain that one to me. And then, as it says at the bottom, they're aware they have gaps in the conservation area appraisals, and indeed, even where there are conservation area appraisals, there is a plan to try and go progressively update them. But again, the planning department really needs the help of all of us in doing that, because whilst they're not mandatory, they do set out a lot of good design principles within what constitutes a conservation area and what makes the conservation area what it is. And again, it says at the bottom, they're looking at ways they can address that within given resources. But I think, rather like Laura said in many respects, the impression I get is a lot more of that work is going to fall on the conservation societies, and indeed, why shouldn't it? The services that the council provides, they're up there. There's a planning information service. There's a duty planner. There's a duty planner plus service, which is basically the same service, but you get it faster and you pay for it. The correspondence service, a pre-application service, and there are planning performance agreements. I'm not going to go into all of those. There are slides here on them in some detail, but you won't be able to see many of them. If we look at the planning service, information service, it basically tells you what type of consent is actually needed to do that. The duty planner will basically give pre-application advice and ensure that the schemes work. As it says here, they give advice on simple domestic extensions and alterations. I've just hit the wrong one. The Duty Planner Plus is a bigger one for agents and local businesses, which will take it in more greater detail. And then there are correspondence services, which do roughly the same thing, but do it by writing. I would say that there is, I'm going to be slightly political again, I'm sorry, Claire, but I would say it seems to be a service which is mainly designed, indeed the whole process is mainly designed to help applicants rather than conservation societies or indeed people who might be affected by the scheme. You try to get the equivalent of pre-planning advice if you're against what somebody is doing rather than if you're in favour of it, and you'll find it's a very much a one-sided scheme at present. But it is there because in the main, you know, the council again, as Laura said, is very much driven by the policies, and we need more housing in the borough. And you need therefore a scheme which is actually going to encourage development and not put lots of extra hurdles or burdens in its way. So that's the scheme they're working in. And within that, as I say, well, there will be architects speaking this afternoon. They'll probably have to tell you better than I can about the sort of advice which is given. But certainly the smaller local residents that we have who make applications and discuss them with the council beforehand do find the scheme very, very useful and generally very, very good. So I'm not trying to knock the scheme as it stands. We talked about the development management plan, which is where most of the guidelines are. There is a planning document which very much affects conservation areas relating to roof extensions, conversions, extensions in the rear extensions, etc., etc. The reference is up there again. I think these will be circulated later. But there is a new version of that coming out, which, as it says there, will provide greater information and clarity on topics such as roofs, windows, basements and front gardens across the whole borough, will provide key information for conservation areas to protect each area's characteristics and heritage. That is something I think we all welcome. I know certainly in our conservation area we now have some fairly detailed guidance on things like windows and window horns and those sorts of things, because they actually vary by virtually by road, and it's very easy to build some or to replace windows, put totally the wrong window horns on the side of the windows, or get the sash window design wrong, and it just looks out of place compared with the others. And we had a great spate of the housing associations trying to do all sorts of bad window replacements. And we've now got them all on side, and slowly, slowly, as windows get replaced, they're beginning to go back to looking as though they all match, which makes in a conservation area like ours, Broccoli I know is slightly more varied in terms of its housing, but the Telegraph Hill one, virtually all the houses were built by exactly the same builder to exactly the same style. So small changes actually do make a proportionately bigger damage to the appearance of the area. And we're slowly sort of working on that. The front gardens one I'm hoping is going to put in more stuff. We've been talking to the council about putting in more stuff about railings and front walls and things like that, which again do the same sort of thing. I know Broccoli's been very much concerned about front garden parking. It's been very much removed in the Telegraph Hill conservation area, virtually banned entirely. But the damage that that has created to the appearance of the conservation area over the 80s and 90s before the Article 4 direction was put in is something phenomenal. And slowly, with the help of these new SPDs, I think we can actually push back on some of those areas. But it says there the council is working on them. They do very much need our help to allow that to continue. The other thing which will affect it, it says at the bottom, we're beginning to prepare. That's the council's beginning to prepare its new local plan, which will be open to consultation and dialogue. Of course, that to some extent will depend on the new London plan, which the Mayor of London is in the process of preparing at present, which is out for consultation in autumn, it says. I haven't been able to get a specific date on that yet. Maybe somebody else knows more than I do. But that consultation over the autumn and over the winter will be very important for all of us in terms of setting the ground plan, because once that's set, then Lewisham Council will have to follow that as well. So that will form a bedrock of any future discussions with the council and indeed council policy. Those are the useful email addresses, but broadly speaking, if in doubt, send something to planning@lewisham.gov.uk. And that will invariably get to the right people. Again, I think they're very good at trying to do that. At least the planning department is. I noticed the last session is on streets, and I find the highways department very, very, very much worse at responding to anything under the sun than planning. But planning there, they said, what was it, 2,000 emails a day? I find that outstanding. But they are actually very, very good at responding to people by email. So that was the sort of trying to take you rapidly through in half an hour. The presentation that Emma gave to us about 3 or 4 months ago, or the conservation side is about 3 or 4 months ago. If from my memory I can answer any few questions in the last couple of minutes, I will try. Otherwise, I would suggest that probably we take notes of them and go back to the council with them and then get comments back to people. Because as I say, I am only the messenger. This is not my day job. I do not work for the council, and all these other caveats you have to put in things. So I hope I've done the best I can.
Yes, thank you
as far as that's concerned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Malcolm.